Because Rashi brings down the two pirushim. The Gizma will say, oh, we're on the lab, you're on the
Okay? There. What about a destructive act on Shabbos, even though it may be very difficult, but it's destructive. According to the Torah law, am I allowed to destroy on Shabbos? Yes, I'm allowed to destroy on Shabbos. Kill till the Shabbos is put there, according to the Torah law. We're not talking about the rabbinical addition. We're going according to the pure Torah law. Destructive acts are forbidden on Shabbos. Now, lighting up fires in the Sephora is the symbol of a destructive act, because fire is the symbol of destruction. Right? This is what the associations are. Fire, he destroys, he burns. Therefore, we might have thought that since fire is the symbol of destruction, the Torah shouldn't include it in creative words. Says the Torah, beware. You may use fire for a creative purpose, and then you're not allowed to do it. But this is the reason why the Torah is to mention it to me specifically, explicitly. This is the sequence
answer. To be part of the thoughts.
You might have thought that since Ash is the symbol of destruction, therefore it has no associations of creative work. Therefore it should be permitted on Shabbos no matter what you do with it, like walking or speaking or eating. Come, the Torah tells you you are wrong. If by making a fire you plan to do something constructive, you are not allowed to do. So even though by its very essence, lighting a fire may be a kill, but since you may use it for a public purpose, don't do it if you do it for a public purpose. But at least it gives you a possibility why the Torah is to write it explicitly, the prohibition against lighting a fire. So I gave you the two classical answers. The Ramban and the Sephora. But now I'm going to tell you the difference of Rabbeinu Sinaitis. Rabbeinu Sinaitis is a completely different approach, a very ingenious approach to the whole problem of why lighting a fire is mentioned explicitly in the Torah. And he gives us the following reason. We mentioned before that the reason why we have to keep Shabbos is because God created the world in six periods, whole days, and we have to identify with Hashem. Hashem created the world and he rested on Shabbos. We are supposed to rest on Shabbos. Yes? Now, the Gemara is talking that new Dalit. It's a very, very interesting Gemara. Why do we do Moshe Shabbos? We make up Dalit on a cup of wine. And we make a half of the cup of wine. We take the Sony and we make a brook of the Sony. Why do we make a brook of the Sony? Because this is a recognition that we are losing a new dimension of the Shabbat, that the Erev Shabbat goes away from us during the week. And smell is associated with that Neshomet, and therefore we smell Sony away from Shabbat. We lose the Neshomet in Seiro. Why do we light a candle away from Shabbat? Says the Gemara. Do you know why we light a candle away from Shabbat? The Gemara is talking about it. Because Odom HaRishon, you know the Maker says that the first Shabbos of Odom HaRishon was Kuloi Oyer. It didn't need any light for Shabbos. There was a natural light. His first Shabbos, you know it according to the Maker, he did Shabbos. Mizmor Shir LeYom HaShabbos, what we say Mizmor Shir LeYom HaShabbos, is taken from Odom HaRishon's original statement. This is the Maker. Time comes to Odom HaRishon. And Odom HaRishon says, so how were you saved from your sin? So Cain says, what do you mean? I did Shuvah. So Odom HaRishon says, really? Shuvah works? And Cain says, yes, it worked for me. So Odom HaRishon says, if so, Mizmor Shir LeYom HaShabbos. In other words, Mizmor Shir LeYom HaShabbos is the recognition that Shuvah works. Here the play on words, Shabbos. Shuvah, the whole idea of Shabbat is a return to the source, going back to the purity, coming to the goal, reaching the goal. This is the idea of Shabbat. And the first Shabbat of Odom HaRishon represents men finally doing Shuvah. This is why it's a yoim, it's a yoim velolaylo, it's a completely, a state of complete clarity, complete light. That was the first Shabbat of Odom HaRishon. But as soon as Shabbat finished, came the first experience of darkness in Odom HaRishon's life. So how does he react to darkness? He lights a fire, says the Gemara in Sotim. The first fire which was created by man is Moshe Shabbos. This is why every Moshe Shabbos we have to remember
all the Morishon lit up a fire Moshe Shabbos, and this is why you lay a fire Moshe Shabbos. Now, what does it mean?
Why did he light a fire?
What?
Why did he light a fire?
Because it was dark. Right? It was his first encounter with darkness, so he lit a fire. So what's the big deal? What do we represent to that? What is the symbolical meaning of that statement? It means that all of a sudden, man started to give his own input into nature. Originally, everything that Adam originally received was received from God directly. All of a sudden, when Moshe Shabbos started, man starts intervening in nature. And lighting that fire is the symbol of man's intervention in nature. Okay? Now, and therefore, we light the fire Moshe Shabbos, as if to say, a whole Shabbos we weren't allowed to light a fire. Now, since Sodom and Rishon waited till Moshe Shabbos to light a fire, so we wait till Moshe Shabbos to light a fire. Now, comes out according to this, that the reason why we can't light a fire until Moshe Shabbos, because Sodom and Rishon first lit a fire Moshe Shabbos. But that doesn't make any sense, as Rabbi Yonasar says. Because, according to this reason, we should be allowed to light a fire on Shabbos. Why? Because what are the things that we are not allowed to do on Shabbos? Those things which are associated with God's creation. Fire is associated with man's creation, with man as a creator. That has nothing to do with Shabbos. So why aren't we allowed to make a fire even on Shabbos? Dear, this is the question for Rabbi Yonasar Aichel. Since Rabbi Yonasar Aichel, this is exactly correct. If the only reason for Shabbos would have been the creation of the world, lighting a fire would have been forbidden, because it has nothing to do with the creation of the world. Lighting a fire has to do with man's input into the world. Except that the creation of the world is not the only reason for giving Shabbos. What is the other reason? Says Rabbi Yonasar Aichel. Take a look. Parshas Veschanon, in the second version of the Ten Commandments. And I'm reading now the fourth commandment in Parshas Veschanon. Shomor Esyum HaShabbos LeKadosho. I'm reading here from Boring chapter 8, Pasuk Yud-Bet. Shomor Esyum HaShabbos LeKadosho. Sheishis Yomim Tavo. You shall work for 6 days. V'yom HaShlish Shabbos. I'm skipping a little bit. Why? V'zochartu ki evedo yisto v'eretz Mitzrayim v'yotziyahu Hashem Elokecho. Which reason is given in the second version of the Ten Commandments why we have to keep Shabbos? It's yes, it's right. If we take a look in Parsha Shmois, in Parsha Yisroi, in Sefer Shmois, and we take a look in Parsha Yisroi, the reason for Shabbos, a completely different reason altogether. In Parsha Yisroi, what does it say? I'm reading Parsha Yisroi now. Zokor Hashem Asal Lekadu, Sheish Yishomim Tavoy Dima Shri Shabbos Hashem Alekecho. Ki Sheish Yishomim Oso Hashem Et Hashomayim Vesores. Two different reasons. Dear, in Parshas Yisroi, in Sefer Shmoy, the reason is the creation of the world. And in Parshas Veschanon, it ignores completely the creation of the world. And it only talks about Yetziat Yisrael. So the obvious question is, how can you make an association between Shabbos and Yetziat Mitzrayim? Shabbos is before Yetziat Mitzrayim. Pesach reminds us of Yetziat Mitzrayim. How can you say that Shabbos reminds us of Yetziat Mitzrayim? As a matter of fact, every time we make Kiddush, what do we say? Zeicher Yetziat Mitzrayim. Again, the same problem. What does Yetziat Mitzrayim have to do with Shabbos? And the answer is the following. Because there is another aspect to Shabbos, independent of the first aspect mentioned in the first version of the Ten Commandments. There is another aspect of Shabbos, and this aspect is the following. When Hashem created Adam originally told him, Tru urvu umilu es ha'oretz deim shuo. Be fruitful and multiply and fill the world deim shuo and conquer it, control it, master it. What does it mean, mastering the world? It means that you have the obligation or the right or the privilege to use all the forces of nature for your benefit. Because you are the master over the world. You were created to serve God, and nature was created to serve you. Therefore, the more you make nature a servant to you, the more the nature is fulfilling the purpose of why it was created. What is the very great danger of such an attitude? the more you become the master over nature. You plow, you seed, you plant, you harvest, you bake, you eat. And you do it over and over again because you have to eat every day, so you have to prepare food every day. So all of a sudden, somebody will tell you, you know what, now stop. You say, stop? I can't stop. I depend on it. You say you depend on it. The whole purpose of your working in nature is to master nature. When you say, I can't live without it, what are you saying? I depend on it. What are you saying? Instead of your being the master of nature, nature becomes the master of your life. Right? Amenu says, what do you mean I can't drive on Shabbos? I can't live without the car. What is he saying? I am a slave of the car. I'm not the master over my car. I don't drive my car. My car drives me. That's what you're actually saying. True. So comes the Shabbos and tells you, you must regain control over your life. You must become independent. Shabbos is the declaration of independence. You don't need nature. You can do without it. You can find everything that you need from within you. You can be creative, but only from within you. You can learn Torah, be creative. You can have marital relations, which is a creative act, but it's all from within. It's not from without. You don't need nature. It's something that's from within. That is good. That's part of your natural independence, your creation from within you. Without nature, you're not a slave. You're an independent person. They say that the portion is Zechar Litzias Mitzrayim. Every Shabbos, we remember the Exodus. The same way the Exodus was the independence of the nation of Israel, every Shabbos is our own personal declaration of independence. We are again showing our mastery over nature by keeping Shabbos. This is the idea of Shabbos. Now, so according to this reason, why we keep Shabbos? Because we have to show that we can do without nature. What does lighting a fire represent? Men dominating nature. So according to the reason of domination, isn't it absolutely necessary to cease doing that work on Shabbos? Of course. Based on the reason of Yetzias Mitzrayim, you can't light a fire on Shabbos. Again, says Rabbi Yisrael Ben Sanachis, if the reason for keeping Shabbos is the creation of the world, then there is a good reason to believe that lighting a fire is permitted. Because lighting a fire has nothing to do with creation. Lighting a fire has to do with man's input into nature, which is man's creation, not God's creation. So therefore, lighting a fire would be permitted. But based on the second version of the Ten Commandments, which uses as a reason why man's independence, so lighting a fire is when man becomes dominant, when he dominates nature. He has to show, no, on Shabbos, I have nothing to do with nature, so don't light a fire. This is Rabbi Yonah Sonnenfeld's concept, that there are two aspects, two reasons for Shabbos. Based on one, lighting a fire would be permitted. Based on the other one, lighting a fire would be prohibited. Therefore, says Rabbi Yonah Sonnenfeld, everything is answered. What? The reason why the Torah has to tell me here, in Parshas Vayakel specifically, because it's giving you the prohibition based on Yetzias Mitzrayim. So you ask, so why is Lo Yisevaru Eish a lesser evil than all the other melochets? Simple, because all the other melochets, you get a few misses, you know why? Because those are related to the reason given in the first tablets. That's the main reason for Shabbos, the creation of the world. So if you transgress it, it's an act of disrespect against God, your chayav miseh. But the second reason, that is the reason that makes it prohibited for you to light a fire. That has to do with your declaration of independence. If you don't do it, you are not chayav miseh, but you are chayav maltes. But with a Yonah and Achish answer, we get a clarity in something else, you see. There is another problem mentioned by the Mefarshim. Between Parshas Kisiso, when Shabbos is mentioned in chapter 31, verse 13, and Parshas Vayakel. Ostensibly, it's the same aloche, because Hashem told it to Moshe, and Moshe repeated to the Jewish people. But if we pay attention, it's a completely different statement. Parshas Kisiso, chapter 31, verse 13. But Ois is a key word for Shabbos. Ois, what does ois mean?
a sign. It's a sign that God created the world. And then he repeats it again in Post-Nuke. Because the human nature is oisi loyal kishesis in the Shomai Mesore. Why is in Parshas Kisitzos, in such a short portion, the word ois is mentioned? Ois, remember, it's an ois, ois, ois. Come Moshe Rabbeinu a week later, right, not a week later, right, but you know, but we're reading a week later in Parshas Vayakel, and he has to repeat what he heard, and what's missing from Parshas Vayakel Shabbos, take a look. Vayakel Moshe, sheshet yomim piyotzen elokho, obim ashe kodesh hashem al kabosho, loy zel arvesh, what's missing? Ois, ois is missing. There is no ois. There is no mission of the creation of the world. Where did that go? Simple, according to Rabbi Yonatan Aichin. Because the portion in Parshas Kisitzos is based on what? On the reason of the creation of the world. When can we call Shabbos a sign? I make a sign, Hashem created the world. When we are talking about the creation of the world, Shabbos is a sign. But when we are talking about the Tzias Mitzrayim, Shabbos is a remembrance, a seicher, not an ois. Therefore, in Parshas Vayakel, that the basis of the whole portion is the reason for Avdut don't become an Eved. So of course there is no ois, there is no creation of the world. Therefore there is, lois of our ways, the whole Mitzrayim. And something else we get clarified according to Rabbi Yosef. Why is it that Moshe Rabbeinu changed the whole aspect of Shabbos mentioned to him by God? Why all of a sudden does he mention the aspect of the independence which is shown by Shabbos? Because what happened in the middle, between the Shabbos in Parshas Kisitzos, last portion of the week, and the Shabbos in Parshas Vayakel, what happened in the middle? The Egel Azov. What is the Egel Azov? Avdus. Egel Azov is Avdus. Is man becoming dependent on something which is not God, on nature? So, what becomes necessary right after the Egel Azov? To mention the Avdus aspect of Shabbos, becoming dependent of your Avdus. Therefore, the Lois of our ways is mentioned. Okay, this is what Rebunus and Aishin clarifies, and of course, it's a completely new picture according to it. Now, let's go on to Posuk Dalet. Vayomer Moshe el kol adat bnei Yisrael. Lemor. This is what God commanded. Interesting as he says, Zeh HaDobor, because the word Zeh is usually associated with what? Whenever it says Zeh in the Torah, it's describing a situation when somebody is pointing to something. You have to, because the word Zeh expresses something which is in front of you. What? Achodesh Hazeh lo chesed l'kibore. Why does it say Achodesh Hazeh? Because it's like Hashem had to point it out to Moshe Rabbeinu. Because the word Zeh represents pointing to something obvious, clear. So why does it say here Zeh HaDobor? This is question number one. The other question is the redundancy of the word Lemor. Pay attention in Pesuk Dalet. Vayomer Moshe kol adat bnei Yisrael Lemor. Zeh HaDobor asher tivo Hashem Lemor. Who may have, do you realize that there is a repetition of, a necessary repetition of the word Lemor? It says already, Vayomer Moshe kol adat bnei Yisrael Lemor. Zeh HaDobor asher tivo Hashem. Who may have, it says already Lemor. Why say twice the word Lemor? Do you know the two problems? So we have a problem of Zeh HaDobor, and we have the problem of the repetition of the word Lemor, and we have a third problem.
Which of the two Lemors is redundant?
Either one. I mean, if you want to say Lemor, that this is something that should be repeated onward, so use either one. Probably the second one is the difficult one. Because the Bayom Rashi Kodesh Hashem said Lemor, say other one says Lemor, or skip the first one. I mean, either one can be taken out, and the whole meaning wouldn't say Lemor. Question number three. You will see the connection once I'll give you the answer. Posuk Hey. How would you translate the word Kehu Meitchem? How would you translate the word? I wonder really how it's translated in English. Kehu Meitchem Frugal Hashem. Take from yourselves. What could it possibly mean? Take from yourselves. So what does it mean? Does it mean give? Say give. What could it possibly mean, give from yourselves?
You should feel it.
But I should feel it, and what about if I don't like, I'm happy about it, what's chum leichem? And then he said, kol nediv libor yevieo es trumas Hashem. Everybody should bring. So why is it chum leichem? What could be the only possible interpretation of take from yourselves? You know, what is the only possible way? Take from each other. Then it would be him. You understand? If I want to tell you, not give, but I want to tell you, take from each other. Force each other to give. Then what would I say? True? So isn't it true that the only interpretation of Kehumeichem seems to be take from each other? But take from each other implies that even if you don't want to give, you are forced to give. And that's not true, because right afterward it says, kol nediv liboy, only if your heart wants to give. So that means that you don't force each other. So doesn't it seem that the beginning of the verse and the second part of the verse are contradicting each other? In the beginning of the verse it seems to be that you force each other, kol nediv, and in the second part it says, kol nediv liboy biel. So we have three problems. Again, zehadovar is a problem. The twice lemor is a problem, and this is a problem, the apparent confrontation between chumeichem and kol nediv liboy, which means that everybody has to feel that he wants to give. So I found in a few portion a quote from the Tshuvas HaRashba. The Rashba wrote thousands of tshuvas, and in one of them they asked them all kinds of questions, and one of the questions they asked them is the following. We know that charity is best given instead quietly, when nobody knows. Right? This is the highest level of charity, which means ideally you should give charity in a way that nobody should know that you are giving, and you shouldn't know who you are giving it to. That's the highest level of charity.
Nobody should know, the recipient should know.
That the recipient shouldn't know that I gave it, right? And that ideally I should give without anybody knowing that I gave. Let's say, sir. Right. What about when somebody builds a synagogue? Should his name be on the synagogue, or he builds a yeshiva, or he does another mitzvah? Is that on all mitzvahs, or it's only on charity that there is a receiver who is sensitive? This is what he asked. So, says the Rashba, it's only on tzedakah that you have to cover it up in order that the man shouldn't suffer, that you know that you are the giver, so you feel very uncomfortable with you. But on other bar mitzvahs, you should publicize who did the business. And by the way, this is the basis for yeshivas, you have plaques, right? This one gave money, this one gave money. What is our basis for such a thing? Is this rifle, by the way? It's a classical rifle, anybody holds it, that you should publicize who did the mitzvah.
So the verse is sensitive.
Yeah, it's quoted. It's for this rabbi, it's quoted all over. That you should publicize who did the mitzvah. Now, what could be the reason for this? I mean, obviously there is a danger, because if my name is publicized, I may feel a guy that is, I may feel proud. That's not so good. What might be the reason why to publicize it is okay? Obviously. What? Exactly. That you should serve as an example to others. Right? People see, you see, this very important man gave money, so everybody else would also learn from him. So even though he pays the price, it doesn't matter. It's still worthwhile because you are making others to give money. Where is it hinted? Where is it hinted? So really, if they call the rascal himself, hints to this parson. What does the Zeh HaDobor indicate? Zeh HaDobor! You say, why does it say Zeh HaDobor? You know why it says Zeh HaDobor? Because it's hinting what? You say to the person, this is the thing that so-and-so donated. Zeh HaDobor. You know, you think what you say, Zeh HaDobor. When you give something which will be said about it, Zeh HaDobor. And one of the other commentaries says, and this is the meaning of the twice labor. Tell the Jewish people that when they give, there is a labor. You know what the word labor means? To tell others. That when you give, that it should be sure that you should tell others. How you tell others? By publicizing it. Oh. So So now it makes sense. Verse number 5. Kehu meichem truma, make each other give. How do you make each other give? So we thought you go and you force each other. No, you know how you make each other give. By publicizing who gives, so you are forcing each other to give. But obviously you are not physically forcing each other, so the other person has to wait until his heart is also attracted to give. So kol nevim libo yeriyo. So we ask, isn't it a contradiction? Here he said that you are forcing each other to give, and then you wait until his heart makes a gift. Simple. When you publicize who did a mitzvah, when it becomes prestigious to do a mitzvah, you know what it does to other people. He starts attracting them. Oh, it's so prestigious to do a mitzvah. So I also like to make a mitzvah. I also like to give money to the Mishkan. So then his heart will start pulling him towards it. Oh, so that's exactly what we want. So we want that he should come up with it, Domer Shevidusha, but we want each one of us to have an influence over the other person. This is what the commentary say concerning these three problems.
I don't understand that other means this mitzvah.
Zehadobor. Now, this is the thing I was to pinpoint, right? Zehadobor. This is what the person gave.
Oh.
Right. Now, then it goes on. It tells us the whole list of everything that was brought. Zoho, Kesem, and Hoshes, everything was brought by the, everything that had to be brought by the people. And then it goes on to say, in Posuk Chof, until Posuk Chof is all a description of what Moshe Rabbeinu told the Jews, I'm giving you a list of what we need. Then it's up to you. So he gives them a whole list that starts here. In Posuk Chof, Cheles Ardoman, in Posuk Hei, the Zoh, Kesem, and Hoshes, Cheles Ardoman, and it goes all the way down to Posuk Yudes. And in Posuk Yudes it stops, and it says, "Vayetsu kol adas bnei Yisrael b'lifnei Moshe." And everybody went home. Very strange that the Torah should tell me that everybody went home. What's the point? What does it add? Then it goes to kol ale. "Vayomboyu kol ish asher neso oili boyu v'chol asher not boru choyu istoy hebiyos trumas asherim." Now, again, if you pay attention what Moshe Rabbeinu told them, when should you bring your share? When your heart will be noited. You see this in Posuk A? What did Moshe Rabbeinu say? Kehu meichem trumo kol nedim liboy. If your leg, if your heart pulls you towards him. What does he say? What actually happened? Kol ish asher neso oili boy, vechol asher nodvo ruchoy. What is not boruchoy mean? And what is the difference between not boruchoy when your spirit pulls you or your heart pulls you? I mean, it's all symbolical. It's all metaphorical. What is the difference between the metaphor of your heart making you give charity or your spirit making you give charity? So, the Amigdoma that it is, says the father, if you take a look in Targum Onkelos, when Targum Onkelos translates in Posuk Chofalet, the two concepts, your heart and your spirit, it says like this. Va'asoy kol var de Yisrael libeh, that means your heart lifts you up. Ve'chol di ashleimas ruchei. He uses by the ruach, by the spirit, he calls it ashleimas. And Ashleimas is associated with what word? Sholei. It feels like the feeling of Shleimus by giving. Said the Amid Dovor. The late, the heart, is always associated with emotions. Now, jealousy is also an emotion. But jealousy sometimes is good. Because the Gemara says, Kinas Soitri, sometimes the jealousy among the scholars, it's good for knowledge. The more jealousy there will be by scholars, just imagine, there is jealousy among scientists concerning a cure for cancer. Is that good or bad? That's excellent, because that will be a great incentive for people to find a cure. So if the goal is positive, then jealousy is permitted. When is jealousy prohibited? When jealousy is negative, when it's destructive. But when jealousy is constructive, then it's good. The lay, we know that the lay of a person, the heart of a person, of course, we're talking metaphorically, has two sides to it. There is the good side, like it says, the Gemara says, the chol levofo. Serve God with both sides of your heart. Because you know the word in the, for lay should be your heart. How would you say in Hebrew, your heart? Libecho. And what does it say in Kriya Shema? Levovecho. So the Gemara starts with your both hearts. Two hearts. What are the two hearts? Your good heart and your bad heart. Now, how can I serve God with my bad heart, the bad part of my heart? Very easy, says the Gemara. If you use, for instance, you have a bad side to your heart, you are very jealous, you are envious of other people. Sometimes it's very good. If your jealousy will serve as an incentive to become a greater scholar, I'm jealous, he gave so much money for Stoke, I want to give more. Sure, let your jealousy control you. So the lay has to do with the usage of the natural instincts of man in a good direction. Ruach is much purer. In a ruach, I don't need any jealousy. Ruach has to do with my sense of obligation. I have to do it, it's the right thing, and I have to fulfill what I feel is missing. I recognize that the shul, the synagogue, has to be built, so I am mushroom the synagogue. I don't just follow the instincts of my heart. I have a sense of what's missing, so therefore I fulfill what's missing. Therefore, says the Amei Dovor, by Ruach, which is the word which makes your spirit work and act, Shleimus, my sense of Shleimus, things have to be fulfilled. By the heart, what works? Jealousy, I want honor, I want fame. That's fine. If you use all those incentives for good things, that's great. So now, Moshe Rabbeinu assumed that after the Chet HaEgel, remember, this is after the Chet HaEgel, right? These people are so corrupt, they gave money for the Egel. The only thing that can get them to work, that can get them to give charity, is only if the few leaders, they will give, and everybody will start becoming jealous. Oh, he gave, so I get to give too. Oh, my next door neighbor gave, I can't go without giving, so I'll also give. So Moshe Rabbeinu assumes that the only incentive to give for the Mishkan would be what? The heart. This is why when Moshe Rabbeinu speaks to the Jews, what does he mention? The heart. But when the Jews went home, they thought it over and they came back. True, some Jews used their heart as an incentive. But there were also Jews who used their spirit as an incentive. What is that? The sense of obligation. Not because the other person is doing that, I also have to do it. The sense that it's the right thing. It's necessary and I have to be imagining what's necessary. This is why. In Pesuk Chof Aleph, it mentions Notzoi Liboi and not Boruchoi. This is why it's mentioned here and it's not mentioned before when Moshe Rabbeinu speaks to the Jewish people. Now, there is one more very interesting comment by the Torah Nemo. It says like this. In Pesuk Chof Bei, it says like this. Men and women came, kol nediv leiv, hebiu choch bonetem, they brought kol nediv leiv, they brought all the jewelry. Says the Gemara, this is the Gemara in Chagiga Daf Yud, listen to this. Mikan, from Pesuk Chof Beis we know that there is, when you make a neder, when you make a vow, and you change your mind, you can come in front of three chachomim, and if you give them a pesa, an opening, they can be matir your neder. Here, let's say you made a neder, I'll give $1 million to soccer, to charity, and then you can't pay it. But you made a promise. A promise is a promise, a vow is a vow. So you can come in front of three chachomim, and they can annul your vow. They ask you, why did you make it? And you say, well, when I made it, I thought I'll take $10 million. It came out that I did, so now I want to change my mind. So based on that opening, they can be matter the neder. So how do we know it? We know it from this Pesuk Chof Beis. This is one of the hints that you can be matter the neder. Says the Torah Mimo, where does it say in Pesuk Chof Beis that you can be matter a neder, that you can annul a vow? So the Torah Mimo says something really, really beautiful. pay attention to what the prophet says. Vayogon Rosh Manash, men and women together came. Kol Nesiv Leib Hediu. Everybody with whose heart the maiden gave the jewelry. If you read Posuk Chof Aleph and Chof Beis together, you will see that the second Kol Nesiv Leib is unnecessary. It says already. Vayogoyu Kol Nisha Sem Esoy Liboy in the Korasher Nosh Boreh Koyet. They came already. And in Posuk Chof Beis, they gave Kol Nesiv Leib. But we know they are Nesiv Leib. What's the proof that they are Nesiv Leib? They are here. What happens in Posuk Chof Aleph? The Jews all of a sudden started fighting God next to Moshe Rabbeinu. Here, we have it here. So we know that their hearts are pushing them to give. So why does the Torah say, Posuk Chof Beis, call the deep lane, maybe you? There could be only one possible reason, said the Torah to me. Why in Posuk Chof Beis, the Nifas HaLeib is still mentioned. Why? Because sometimes you get excited about an idea. Right. You say, hey, you know, I'm ready to give. Here, I'm taking money, I'm taking the checkbook. You come there, you are ready to give, and all of a sudden you get cold feet. That happens. When it comes to the mindset, when it comes to the last point, you get cold feet. But sometimes, you know, you are so committed to what you are supposed to do that you can't back down. But you would like to back down. Okay? How do we know that that wasn't the case there by the charity that was given for the mission? How do we know that there wasn't just an initial excitement, but when they came to give, many of them got cold feet, but they were forced to give? That's it. How do we know that? We know it from Posuk Chof Beis. Why? Because Posuk Chof Beis is already describing the Jews standing there with the charity in their hands, and the Torah still describes them as what? Kol Nesiv Leib. What does it mean? That they were as excited in the last step of the giving as they were in the beginning. Implication. What would have happened had they not been excited, had they gotten cold feet right before the gate? What is the implication from the Torah? That they made a way out. If the Torah says that they were excited when they were giving, the halakhic implication of that statement is that if you lose your excitement at the last moment, you can change your mind. How can you change your mind? Only one way. How? By annulling your vow in front of the three chachamim. So here you have a clear hint to the halakha, that in case you change your mind right before you actually have to give, you can be matter than ether. Because you see that the Torah had to tell you that in the moment right before the gift, they still felt like giving. Oh, so that's a good proof to address the story. This is the third thing. Okay, we'll continue later.